Hello, I'm Mike Smithson, editor of politicalbetting.com. I'm standing in for Kieran Pedley tonight because he's on holiday. And can I welcome everybody to the PB Polling Matters podcast. With me, I have Leo Barassi, who's been with us before, who's an expert on US politics, as well as UK politics as well. And later, we have Ed Fulton of the Sporting Index spread betting firm, when we're going to be looking at spread betting and how that applies in political markets. But first of all, I want to start with the US election, which is, just to touch on it, which has gone through a sort of fairly quiet period because we've only had one full primary in the sort of over a period of about 3 weeks. And that was Wisconsin, which we discussed last week. So, Leo, how do you think it's going now, the state of the race?
Well, hi, Mike. Broadly, it's been a fairly bad couple of weeks for Trump. Clearly, we had Wisconsin, which he slightly underperformed in. I think he got six delegates to Cruz's 36. And then we had Colorado, where he got no delegates because of an organizational disaster on his side. And you know, these are results that are not entirely unexpected, but we're at a point now where, look, he's going to get the most delegates. The question is whether or not he goes into the convention with a majority. He needs to be not just doing better than underperforming, he needs to be overperforming. And it's not that the results of the last couple of weeks make it impossible for him, but they're making it just a bit harder, and he's now going to have to be overperforming a bit more. And the lesson of Colorado is probably worrying for some of the later states. So if he couldn't get his organization together to be properly on the ballot in Colorado, that's going to have implications if the same thing happens in places like California.
I think what the Washington Post is carrying a story this morning about troubles that he's got in California, which is the biggest state of all. And apparently it's a sort of complex process that in each polling area you've got to have a delegate and you've got to have an alternative delegate, and there are 160 odd of these, and the sheer organisational task of going to every little precinct area and finding them is obviously causing him a big challenge.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he needs to be doing well. He's got to have a great performance in California to be the one in the majority when he gets to the convention. I think it's looking challenging. It's not impossible by any means. And I think one of the problems that we have with, particularly when it gets this slightly more drawn out time, is we overreact to things, or people can overreact to things. I think we've got to be careful not to see this new bit of information as changing everything. But I think it's fair to say that things are a bit harder for him now.
Yeah.
And then on the Democratic side, frankly, I don't think very much has changed. Sanders had quite a good Wyoming caucus and slightly overperformed. But really, he has been doing quite well in caucuses. And there are only two more of those left, largely onto primaries now, where Hillary's tending to do better. And again, Sanders needs to be really quite significantly overperforming to have any chance of closing the gap. It's still possible, but it's sort of getting to the kind of territory where he needs to be doing extremely well, really quite freakishly well, for this to change.
Well, thank you for that. And I think we now just to move on to the UK. And of course, the big news is that that Vote Leave has been designated as the official campaign for that element. And it comes at a time when the polling for the for this is actually getting quite close. The ICM poll, the latest one, has Leave with a 45% share and Remain on 42%. And looking at the data on that, I noticed that the numbers were actually level pegging until you applied a turnout filter. Now, how difficult, I know you worked in American polling, how difficult is it as a pollster to try and measure whether people are going to be, whether those you're interviewing are actually going to vote or not?
Well, I mean, firstly, I should just clarify that there are people who've had to get around the problem of turnout to a much greater extent than I have, and I have an enormous amount of sympathy with them because it's hugely difficult. Essentially, people will say that they are definitely going to turn out, and we know that some of them are not telling the truth, or to be generous, that their claim to not, that they are definitely going to turn out will hit reality and they won't be able to make it in practice, whether or not it's a lie is sort of a moot point. And you know, for an election like this, it's clearly absolutely crucial that, you know, we saw last year that it seems to me, and there are other possible explanations, but it seems to me that differential response rates, people saying that they're going to differential turnout, people saying that they're going to vote and then not, was one of the things that made the polling inaccurate and was one of the greatest problems. I think that is exacerbated particularly now, because it seems that the differential turnout is especially the case for the two sides here.
Yes, indeed. I mean, one of the things that I think we see is that there is a massive effort going on, which has been put into place this week with the Electoral Commission, who oversee elections, and on Facebook, to try to get people to register, and they're claiming quite big numbers. How unusual is it to use social media for that, rather than just putting advertisements in the paper?
Yeah, well, it's a relatively new thing, and you know, it sort of feels innovative if you're starting from a perspective where the alternative would be putting out print ads or TV ads or radio ads. I mean, on the street outside my house, there's a billboard or a street ad saying you need to vote, or you need to register, but. I mean, Facebook, it's been clear now from the last UK election, from the last presidential US election, is absolutely the way to get to quite specific segments of the electorate. And it's clear that changes to registration on top of traditional lower turnout amongst young people means that people who are on Facebook, particularly younger people, are absolutely the audience to be doing this. So it feels very much the right thing to do, campaigning using the kind of segmentation, micro-targeting that you can do with social media has really been proved to work. Whether it can absolutely hit younger people and people who are less engaged with politics, I think is not yet proven. Yeah. It seems a wise thing to be trying. Whether it's going to be successful, who knows?
I think if you look at the data we have from Ipsos Mori, produced after the last election, showing turnout levels in the different age segments, you see quite startling difference. Here we have the 65 plus, 78% of them turn out. You get down to the 18 to 24s, 43% of those turn out. We know, of course, that these people are much more likely to vote to leave. These people are much likely to vote for remain. But if they at those sort of turnout levels, that's a massive challenge, isn't it?
It is, and you know if I was running the Remain campaign, this kind of chart would be the thing absolutely number one in my mind, and it would be trying to get the people who aren't likely to turn out to change. But you know, non-voters, the one thing that they've got in common is that they don't vote. I mean, this is, you know, you slightly start getting into the realm perhaps of dare I say, some of the people who think that Labour can win again by getting non-voters to vote for them. You know, let's not pretend that all you've got to do is just get young people to vote and suddenly it's all going to be different. There's a challenge here.
It's quite interesting, actually, if you look at the socioeconomic breakdown here, and you see again something very interesting, and that is that, you know, in terms of turnout, it's the ABs and C1s, the more affluent, are the ones who actually turn out on the day, and it's the DEs and C2s who are much less likely to turn out. So I always think that those two charts actually give a very good feel for the electorate and how any campaign really needs to focus that through.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and you know, sort of thinking specifically about the EU referendum, clearly now we're seeing polls that are close to being tied. I think Personally, I'm sort of slightly swayed, or broadly swayed by the view that just because we're getting lots of online polls and fewer phone polls doesn't mean that we should be similarly weighting it towards online, and we need to recognise that the phone polls are still showing a fair lead for Remain. So, you know, we don't want to call it absolutely neck and neck at the moment. But those quite close polls are taking into account that Remain voters are saying that they're less likely to turn out than Leave voters. So this is already factoring in this sort of information, with the proviso that we assume that people are giving the correct information when they're talking to pollsters. And this comes back to the fundamental question that if someone says they're absolutely certain to vote, is that true? And is it true across different groups? And you know, if a young person says that they're certain to vote, is that as likely as if an older person says that they're certain to vote? And that's a fundamental question. But if we're sort of okay with that, and if we can sort of deal with that, then it feels like as awareness of the referendum increases, we've still got 2 months. As people get more into the idea that this is coming, then you might see that the polls find slight increases in people saying that they're certain to vote. And the space for that increase is more among, at the moment, people who are more likely to say that they would vote to stay. So sort of you can make an argument both ways, but I think these turnout figures are not only bad news for the Remain side. You could say that this actually suggests that as people get to know the referendum a bit better, then it potentially suggests that their numbers could increase a bit.
Anyway, I've no doubt that we will be returning to the subject of the EU referendum in many future shows.
I'm sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the PB Polling Matters Politics Show. In the studio joining us is Ed Fulton, who's from Sporting Index. And I've invited him in because I wanted to look at this different form of betting, which actually lends itself very nicely to politics. I have to say that I've won a lot of money spent betting on politics, and I've also lost a lot of money. And my wife will be watching this, so I need to put that in.
Good, and it's true. It's absolutely right. It's the classic selling point for spread betting is the more you're right, the more you win. Conversely, the more you're wrong, the more you lose. So if you have a strong opinion on the number of seats that the Tories are going to win, whatever, and our quote is significantly lower than you predict, if, like a year ago, it turns out they do significantly better, for each seat they win above the quote, you're winning a multiple of your stake. And that's a very attractive. So it's not a case of, oh, you backed a Tory majority at 4-1, and if it was a landslide or not, didn't really make any difference, you've got your 4-1. This is, you can stay up at the night and you can cheer on every seat, swings and stuff. And people love politics. They're passionate about it as much as football. People have their tribal loyalty to, you know, Labour or Tories or even the Lib Dems. They had a shocking night, obviously, a year ago. And so people like to put to back their judgment, but also their passion as well. And I think politics, those two collide. And we always see a lot of business, particularly the last couple of years. I would say it started with the Obama re-election, when people really got interested in that. And then we've had the Scottish referendum, the build-up to the general election. We've got Brexit. We've got the Scottish elections, which we're having markets on. And, of course, the White House in November. So much going on.
Right. We've got a screenshot of your latest numbers. What I'd like you to do, Ed, and I think a lot of people simply find it incomprehensible.
Yeah.
They just don't understand how you actually spread bet. I wonder if you could just take us through it. I mean, you might want. I'm actually betting on the turnout market.
So. Yes. Well, that's the easiest place to start. You're absolutely right. It's as it sounds. The turnout. What is going to be the turnout of the Brexit? How many people are going to vote? If we take as an example, the Scottish referendum, we opened our quote, I think, high 60s, low 70s.
Yeah.
The turnout, I think, in the end was 84.
Yeah, 84%. 84%.
So if you bought early on at, say, 71, by the time it closed, well, we saw the results, 84% of Scottish people turned up to vote, to use their democratic right. You're winning the difference between what you paid and what it made up. 84 minus the 71, 13 times your stake. Yeah. So if you did that for £10 per percentage point, you've won £130. And we're doing exactly the same for the Brexit. We're saying just under two-thirds of British people will express a desire to either stay in the European Union or withdraw. And it's been bought up, I think. Which way have you...
I bet on a sell.
Yeah, you're betting on a sell. Well, I think recent results in Europe, I think in the Netherlands, their plebiscite or whatever it was in the European, that was 32%, 33%. Yeah. Other ones have been much lower. Some haven't even passed the threshold to qualify as, vindicating whatever they said. So it's a hard one, because if you're passionate about the European debate, you can't imagine that anyone isn't.
Yeah.
You think, well, we're all going to turn up, aren't we? But, and I think we know who's going to turn up. I think four-fifths of over 65s voted the general election, less than half of under 35s.
Yeah.
It seems to me the split is, if you're, the older you are, the more likely you are to vote for Brexit, and the younger, you're more passionate about being European and you're all-inclusive and stuff. So that's the interesting thing, how the split comes. I mean, obviously, I think the percentage, I think it's going to be about right. I think possibly slightly lower. I think you might mid-50s,
yeah,
something like
I
that.
I think I've got a nice bet on that, 10 to 1, that it'd be below 55.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my...
And I think the hardest thing is where people are going to the polls in May, and then they're going to be asked 6 weeks later to do it all again. And it's June, people are going on holiday, they're not necessarily in their constituency. I think that was the story of June 1970, wasn't it? The last time we had a June election of any kind in this country. Harold Wilson thought he was going to have a shoo-in. People weren't around.
Yeah.
It was a hot summer, people were on holiday, and Ted Heath snuck in the back door. So it's just, it's an odd time, June, to hold an election of any kind. So I think that's on your side,
well,
in terms of low turnout.
Well, the other thing is, of course, England plays Slovakia on the Monday, and I've got to think there's going to be massive gloom in the country. Maybe not in Scotland, Wales and Ireland when England are group stages.
Well, they said that in 1970, didn't they? Because England lost to West Germany, as it was then, in the quarterfinals, about 5 days before the vote. And some people suggested that's why they blame the government, that... Not for taking Bobby Charlton off with 20 minutes to go. It was Harold Wilson's fault.
So is it possible then to... So if I looked at that and I said, I think turnout is going to be very closely related to what the result is going to be. So for if I thought a lower turnout means that there's more it's more likely that we're going to leave, which I think is a fair assumption. And I think it was Adam Drummond of the Opinion came out with a rule of thumb the other day of if it's below 50%, it'll be leave. If it's more than 50%, it'll be remain. So is it possible with the spread betting to sort of create your own bets to work that out?
You would probably want to do two bets. If you're of a mind that it was going to be a lower turnout, you'd probably sell, as Mike's done, selling at 60 now. So every point under 60% turnout, you're winning. And you'd probably then do a small buy of the out percentage. We're going 46, 47. Mm. So you could relate the two, and they would obviously, if you're wrong, you'd be wrong on both.
Yeah.
But yes, I think that's absolutely right. If the turnout is somewhere around 50%, I think if you're buying at 47 for the out, you're not going to be losing too much money and possibly winning. But I think we're in fascinating territory with the polls, because everyone's treading on eggshells. This is a test for that industry as much as anything else, because they were so badly wrong last year. And it seems to me that the polls are saying in will win just, but their percentage of people who are undecided yet is still big enough to cover them. So I think anything could happen yet.
Yeah.
I really do. I presumed it was going to be a narrow stay, remain, and gun against the head, I'd probably think that's where we're going to be at. But, June, the migrant crisis, if it's back up and running again, all sorts of things could have happened by then. The football not as much as anything else. So it seems to me that the Remain campaign have got more to lose between, and it's not about personality. People thought, well, people aren't going to associate with Farage type lunatics, if that's your thinking. It's about a much bigger idea than that, which I think Remain were worried about, and that seems to me what's happening.
Yeah. What about other markets? I know you've got markets up on the US race, the White House race, which we focus on a lot, and I know that, I guess that once we've got the nominees in place, you'll set up an electoral college vote market, which I love it. I love betting on that, because it's so you really study politics, and the chances of making that work for you, you know, the win that state, that's 28 colleges.
Yep. Well, we're going to break it down to states as well. Yep. I think we did about 20 states last time, so we'll probably beat that. Some states are, you know, they're red or blue forever, but the swing states will do an index on all of those to win. At the moment, on a 50-25 index, it was 50 for winning the presidency, 25 for winning the nomination. You've got Hillary's 38-41. So if you buy 41 and she's in the White House come January, you're going to make 9 points because you've there. If she gets the nomination, which she should do, unless the FBI have something to say about it, you would lose 41 minus the 25.
16.
Yeah. So you'll still get, you'll have the solid base that she's going to, it's wide open. Even yesterday when Paul Ryan, who's been touted by everyone, came and said, I'm not seeking the nomination, and I will not accept it if you give it to me. He had to say that. Yeah. Now, the maths is, to me, no one is going to have enough votes come Cleveland for the GOP convention. So we're going to have a vote in the, you know, within the states in the hall, and no one's going to win the first round vote. And there's a revelation about Cruz's private life or something happens between them. But they're in this sort of death struggle. So there will be a series of votes to me. And if they come to Paul Ryan and say, Paul, or Mitt Romney, or someone else, and say, these two don't like each other, we're not going anywhere, we're going to destroy the party, we're going to hand the White House to the Democrats for another 8 years probably, and we'll lose countless House seats, countless Senate seats, they'll probably elect another three judges because they're all getting quite old in the Supreme Court. You know, we're going to have a Democratic America.
Yeah.
Is Paul Ryan really going to go, I've said I wasn't.
One of the great things that this show can state is that back in November, podcast version of the show had Stan Greenberg, the great American pollster, and he went through all of this, and he said, well, come on, give a tip. And he tipped Paul Ryan. And at the time, I got 203-1 or 204 on Betfair. And that's a nice, you know, I love bets like that because, you know, you don't only, you have lots of them and still, which are losers, but when you get one or two coming up big, that really helps.
Well, it won't surprise that I've had similar things on the Wisconsin man as well.
Yeah.
I was a bit glum yesterday when he announced that, but actually he has to. He had to say something because otherwise it will just, you know, every time he's there. He's releasing these extraordinary campaign videos, isn't he, where he's talking to people about bringing people together, this idea, that idea. He's tweeting pictures of him meeting Marines on US bases in Europe. He's meeting Germans and Israelis. He's a Speaker of the House of Representatives, but he's doing, apparently Boehner did some of that as well.
Yeah.
But he would, if he picked a moderate as a running mate, maybe a Kasich.
Yeah.
Now, Ryan Kasich, to me, is a sort of Republican ticket that could win independence.
Yeah.
If it's Cruz or Trump, it's, you know, every now and then there's a smashing in America. Goldwater, 64, McGovern, 72, Mondale, 84. They just get wiped and they just shrug. There is an opportunity against a really unpopular person, Hillary Clinton.
And there was, if I'd heard that argument a couple of weeks ago, I would have said, and I think actually if Kieran was here, he would say, but hang on a minute, there's going to be a huge mandate for Trump or Cruz. There's going to be a lot of Republican voters who are going to say, well, hang on a minute, this isn't fair. That's completely undemocratic. How can you possibly do that? We've said who we want, and you're saying, no, you can't have that. So we're going to take our ball away. If you do that, we ain't going to vote for them. We're going to go home and you can put up that person, but they're going to lose. But I think there was a poll that 538 were going big on this week, I think, which actually I think it was something like 2/3 or even 3/4 of Trump supporters said, even in that situation, I would still vote for someone else as a Republican candidate, which, surprisingly, and a poll is one of those places where you probably overstate your anger about that kind of thing. So if they're saying they're still going to do it, then it could happen.
Ask them, ask them in September or October when it's Ryan v. Clinton.
Exactly.
Are they really going to give the White House to Hillary Clinton? And by the way, no one's going to be stealing anything. The rules are clear. Get over the line, it's yours.
Yeah.
You don't get over the line. This is what used to happen.
Mm.
The Republicans have had 10 brokered conventions in their history when they, often someone who either wasn't on the ticket or barely gained any delegates, and they even went on to win the White House. We've just got used to, I think, in the last few years to the the primaries. But look back through history, this is what happens. You're not electing Donald Trump, you're electing people to put forward the best candidate to represent their party. And it's about winning. And ultimately, if they want to win enough, and it does come to the convention and it's Cruz, Trump, just, you know. I have a theory as well, and I probably shouldn't say this in terms of that Trump doesn't really want this.
Yes, I've got that theory.
It started as a bit of a game, and it's accelerated much as it probably did for Corbyn.
Well, so I was just going to say that. Doesn't it feel exactly? I mean, it's interesting. So I would agree with that, with the how much did either want it. But on the analogy of, you know, this about winning and so on, could you imagine the response of Corbyn supporters in Labour if he was dethroned?
That's a very good
example. You know,
but he won. He won legitimately, Corbyn.
Yeah. Well, but under a certain set of rules and...
But if it had been the old system, Corbyn would not be leader if it had been based on the MPs' votes. Yeah. And the, even though he got most votes.
Yes, Ed Miliband begat Corbyn.
We could go on all night.
Can we? I love it.
This is fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic. Really great you've been on the show, and I hope you'll be able to come on
again. Anytime. I'd love to come on. We could talk. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good night, and thank you very much for joining us for this discussion. Good night.